This episode is brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms. Over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network on Tour. We are broadcasting today from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm your host, Katie Mosman-Wadler.
And I'm Kat Johnson.
Tonight we are at Luca Modern Italian Kitchen with the chef and owner Luca and Jessica Annunziata. Thank you, guys.
Ciao, buonasera.
Buonasera. So we have a lot of things to talk to you about tonight. Primarily, I want to start with your love story and your history of how you came to be operating Luca in Charlotte. So how did you two meet, first of all, and then tell us about how you went into business?
Well, me and Jessica, we met in New York, Long Island, actually a small island off Long Island, Far Island. We met there. I was the chef. She was the waitress. First love. She told me she was Italian, so I was excited. And I started to speak Italian. And then she said, I just speak a little bit. And I was keep speaking. And that's the way we started, and we've been together since then.
Wow.
We moved from New York about 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. We came down to the south, and we just fell in love. As you can hear from my accent...
back to Italy. You're leaving out a few things.
Yes, yes. So we started in Long Island, and then after... couple of years, right after September 11, we moved back to Italy for a little bit over a year, where I worked at Don Alfonso two-star Michelin. I did that for a year, and then after that, we came back to the United States, and we came down to the South. I was born and raised in South Italy, and we thought, why not move down South, where the weather and the four season and the people are just, you know, just wonderful, and we really enjoyed it here.
Had you spent time in the South before, or in North Carolina, either of you?
No. The only time Jessica did was she came over weekend to scoop the Charlotte and see, you know, to look for, you know, because we wanted to move from New York. So she came over weekend and she really fell in love. And then when she came back, she says, okay, that's it. We're moving next week. And I was like, okay, but we don't have no job. We don't have nothing. He says, it's okay, honey. We got a little bit of money. We're going to be okay. Let's go. So we packed and left.
Just like that.
Just like that. And, we came. It was hard for me the first 3 months. Jessica found a job right away. And it took me about three and a half months to find a job because I was overqualified for each position that I went. I applied. So...
he was too expensive.
Right. And situation got a little bit... critical, like, you know, we about ran out of money. Mm-hmm. And so I had to go back to New York for a couple of weeks to try to make some money, and then come back, and then finally I had to find a job, and that's the way that we started it. So first job in Charlotte, I was the sous chef at the Hilton, and then I was the chef de cuisine at the Westin, and then about 12 years ago, we opened up our first restaurant called Passion 8 Bistro in Fort Mill, South Carolina. And we did that for 8 years. And then about 3 years ago, we moved to Charlotte. And about 3 months ago, we did something called rebrand, where... Jessica and myself decide finally to do something that came spontaneous for us, and was cooking Italian food, because I am Italian, and I just wanted to cook from my heart. This is cooking Italian for me. It's cooking spontaneously. It's so easy, good ingredients, made with love, and Jessica helped me out.
I think once we hit our 10th anniversary, we were ready for something new and exciting, and it was time for a shift. And the Italian thing, our clientele always knew that we would make, you know, dishes at a moment's notice, a lot of, you know, special requests. So it got to the point where, you know, about 2 years ago, a good portion of our regular diners were not eating off the regular menu.
Wow.
And it just felt, you know, it was really exciting that they entrusted us to make these dishes that they loved. But it was also, you know, really a challenge because everybody was asking for specific things. So I just felt that it was time to, that we needed to explore this. And in Charlotte here, we felt that there was really no other authentic Mediterranean restaurants doing beautiful, very simple ingredients, elevated Italian food. And we felt, you know, why not us? Mm-hmm. Why aren't we showcasing what we do? As far as I'm concerned, no one does it better than Luca. But there was a reluctancy. We were afraid that they were going to want the Olive Garden. This is the South. This is, you know, it's a little bit different. And the understanding that, you know, pasta is a 4-ounce portion and not a platter was a little scary for us. And
what has the reaction been?
It's been tremendous. It's been, you know, the writing is on the wall. This is what we should have done a very long time ago. It's easy and simple and beautiful food, and people are really excited.
And so, in a way, though, your clientele at Passionate told you that they wanted Luca's kind of hometown cooking.
All along. And our parents, you know, my parents especially, have always, especially my father, why aren't you, this is who you are. This is what you do. This is what we eat at home. Why aren't you cooking this food? I don't understand. And we just felt that it was time at, you know, 12 years ago, really proud of how instrumental Luca was on, you know, the farm to fork movement here in Charlotte and bridging agriculture and, you know, and the consumer. And that's something that we're really, really proud of. You know, still even to this day, the connections and the relationships that, you know, we've gotten to cultivate have made us who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's exciting to do what we do. It really is a showcase of ingredients. So, but this was, I don't know, at this time in our lives, we felt that it shouldn't be so complicated. This is exactly what we should do. And the menu and all of the ideas, and there is an enthusiasm and an emotional connection to many of these dishes in a way that, you know, I can't even articulate. A lot of these recipes are his mom's. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to ask Luca you more about that. You were just telling us that your father was a butcher. Tell us more about the influence of, you know, your childhood in growing up in Italy and how we see that on the menu.
Well, growing up, I mean, like, even if my father was a butcher, we never ate filet mignon. I mean, like, we had brain, tail, we had the heart, the liver. So
that was for the customers.
You know,
the customers got the
filet. Right. So we were just allowed to have whatever the customer did not eat. So we grew up with peasant food. We eat tripe. We eat brain. I mean, like. And my mom, every day, she never cooked the same thing. She always had, God bless her, I miss her every day. But, you know, I learned so much from her that inspired me. You know, my house, we never bought a pasta from the box. We always made our pasta. I mean, like, on Sunday it was a lasagna, or it was bolognese, or it was gnocchi. I mean, like, that was, we grew up with that. Genoese was at least a couple times a week, you know, and just the simplicity, but the flavor. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what's really missing, you know, what was missing before. Yeah, the presentation was beautiful, the produce, everything was gorgeous, but in the end, you know, I wanted more flavor. And cooking Italian food, it gives me lots of flavor.
So after you've made the rebrand, what was the first moment where you felt really sure that this was the right move and that you felt confident in the decision to turn this into Luca Modern Italian Kitchen?
He sings again.
Right. I'm happy.
In the kitchen.
I am happy. Truly. I am happy. Like, you know, cooking, making gnocchi, and it brings me back the memory of my mother. Making that pomodoro sauce with the San Marzano and the passata and the cherry tomato, it brings me back everything that I grew up with. And in the face of the people eating Italian food, it is just amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of people, oh my God, my grandmother used to do that. You know, zucchini blossoms, oh my God. You know, it's been a while since I had them. You know, and octopus and, you know, it's just all memories that makes people happy. A comfortable food, you know.
Jessica, will you tell us more about Luca singing in the kitchen?
I always thought he had a beautiful voice. But it really is true. We at our old restaurant in our old location, we had our entire kitchen, you know, set up for any kind of music that he wanted to hear. And there was always music playing in the kitchen. And we would sing. And when we made the move to Charlotte 3 years ago, and you know, our restaurant, it's absolutely beautiful, but it's a behemoth. It's a large, big space, and I feel we were a little bit sidetracked. It was always an aim to please. We wanted to make sure that we cooked and prepared beautiful food always. That was always the mission, but we started to listen to too many outside opinions and forces, and it became a little confusing and loud for us. We didn't know who we were. We somewhat lost our identity in trying to do too much and be too thought-provoking and create these, you know, non-food foams and jellies and things that people have a hard time identifying with. And there's a place for that, you know, haute, eloquent, beautiful cuisine, and you know, there's definitely people that, you know, we admire in the food scene that are doing those things, but that's not what the lay people want. That's not what, you know, before we were an occasion destination, it was anniversaries and birthdays, and now it's let's go eat. The food is welcoming, it's easy, it's accessible, and it's simplistic.
So you use the word identity, and I think that's interesting because clearly a lot of what Luca is about now is the Italian identity, and that's the food you're cooking, but we're also in Charlotte. So how does the location of the restaurant play into the identity of the menu and of the restaurant as a whole?
It's no longer, you know, it's from within, not from without. And I feel that's why we are doing the best food we've ever done. And, you know, the way that the menu is designed, we have regionally specific representations that we have not altered in any way. Those dishes are the way they're intended. Whether you're dining here on Elizabeth Avenue or in Venezia, that's the dish. However, that's a very small section of our menu. The rest of the menu is Luca's interpretation. So it's twists and plays on classic dishes. And I really feel that, you know, the reason that we've become, you know, so much more successful in the last few weeks and months is that it's no longer about everyone's idea of who we should be. It's a connection to who we are and have always been. And it's, you know, we get to pay homage to, you know, my mother-in-law and, you know, my grandmothers. And there's a reason the food is so good, and it's generational because it's delicious and it's simple.
Is there a play between the Italian-American food that you grew up with and the menu now? Are there influences from the New York Italian cuisine that are kind of interplaying with the traditional cuisine of Naples?
I think that's a really good question. And absolutely, those zucchini blossoms, we call them guganziel. My family is also from Naples, and I grew up eating that. Mm-hmm. And what connected Luca and I initially, we stumbled, as he said, you know, with language and communication, but we didn't really need words. we had food. And that's
food.
Uh-huh. Air quotes.
We're getting some air quotes from Luca.
No, but it's really true. And that's why, you know, that's why we named it Passionate. The restaurant's the name of the restaurant was because we are so excited about
food.
Air quotes.
And eating and drinking, and it should be a celebration of life. And, you know, the way that I was raised, you know, our food is what we spoke. I'm second generation. And Luca is from, you know, a 5-minute car ride from where my grandmother was from. Mm-hmm. And that was the connector. And we moved to Italy after September 11th. And it's very different, Italian-American fare, as it is in Naples. But there's an underlining basis. And I don't know, there's just so much love that goes into that food. And I know that it's stereotypical, but every stereotype is based on truth. And that is the way that Italians express love. And I see it in the dining room. I'm the front of the house. It's visceral. I watch it for a living. And the reason I know that we're now successful is there's an energy in this room that wasn't there for the entire 3 years that we've been here in this location. We had it once, and it's magic, and you can feel it. And that's why the people who understand this industry and that are in this business, in the front of the house especially, it's so validating. And I know that, you know, it's not in terms of numbers. Everybody's measure of success is different, but I think that we've connected the dots. I think we were doing our job.
If you could travel back in time 3 years, say, what advice would you give your past selves?
Wow, girl. Shut it out. Be inspired and influenced, but not taken over by everyone else's idea of who you should be. Mm-hmm. You know, you know who you are, and I think that the biggest drive was always what we had to say on the plate and in the glass. And that stopped being the driving force.
I feel like we were trying too hard, you know. And when you try too hard, sometimes it doesn't work. Spontaneous, it's always the better result. Mm-hmm.
It needs to be natural and not forced. And right. I think people sense that. And our food was a little esoteric. You know, we are in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think it was a little, honestly, sometimes too elevated and sophisticated and intimidating in a way. And that's not, I feel, what food should ever be. It should be beautiful and
tasty.
Tasty.
Mm-hmm. Tasty. Well, bravo with that. We have to take a quick break to have a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms. Over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association seal of approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.
Welcome back. This is Heritage Radio Network on tour. Thanks again to our sponsor, Springer Mountain Farms Chicken. We are back with Luca and Jessica Annunziata at Luca Modern Italian Kitchen. And Luca, as we get back into the discussion, I want to ask you about, you've staged and you've cooked in many countries around the world, and I am dying to know how many languages you speak.
Five.
Uh-huh. And so, they are?
Well, Italian, English, German, Spanish, French, and a little bit of Filipino. I learned that from when I used to work on a cruise ship. I did a cruise ship almost 22 months.
Wow. So I just actually counted seven. And earlier you mentioned Swiss German.
Yes.
So that I actually have eight by that count.
But some of them I can just understand. Some of them I cannot write it. But
you can speak.
Oh yeah, I can make myself understand.
Yeah, that's incredible.
You know, we're Napolitan. We speak with the hands.
Uh huh.
Anywhere we go in the world, anywhere in the world we go, we always make ourselves understand.
I'm dying to know what it was like cooking on a cruise ship.
Well, the first contract, I was a chef poissonnier, so I was in charge of all fish on board. That was my first contract.
What they call you?
Smelly fish cook. They call me the smelly fish cook. And, well, nobody wanted to share a cabin with me. And... That was a good one because, you know, I mean, dealing with fish all day, cooking it, it was smelly. And
hence the name.
I'm sorry?
Hence the name, Smelly
yes.
Fish.
They used to call me Smelly Fish Cook, and it's true. But I had a good time. I would say, maybe one of the most hard jobs I ever had because I did 6 months on, 2 months off. But I think 6 months on, no days off, you worked 15 hours a day. And you party all night, and then you went to work the next day for 6 months. And I saw the world. I had a blast. I saved a lot of money, not tax. Everything was cheap around the world.
You didn't have to keep an apartment.
No.
No rent.
No rent, free food. But I really enjoyed it because I really took advantage of every country I went. I always went out and tried to eat the food and see the history and, you know, learn about the place. But I was really interested about the food. I always did restaurants and eat anything. I never asked what I was eating. I was just eating. You know, when you go to Thailand and Bangkok or Asia... I just ate. I never asked what I was eating because I didn't want to know. It was just delicious.
Don't ask questions, just eat.
Just eat.
Like what we did tonight.
Right.
So speaking of that, can you tell us a few of the highlights of the menu that we ate tonight?
Well, I really wanted to bring you back to my memories. Let's start with the gnocchi. That's traditional, you know, with the potato and flour. And then a good tomato, and then house-made mozzarella, and then baked it. We had octopus alla griglia. I mean, like, we eat ton of octopus where I am from. You had a Genovese. It's the white bolognese sauce. And we eat Genovese probably two times a week with my mom. You know, of course, I took that to the next level by adding, you know, the rabbit. But traditional... Genovese is just with the ground beef, carrots, onion, celery, and then you let it simmer it, and then parsley, and then you put your pasta, and then you put parmigiano, and then extra virgin olive oil, and then you eat it. So I wanted to show you as well another dish that really it takes that to my heart, the mozzarella di bufala. I mean, we have mozzarella home. I can eat mozzarella for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, just like that. Just like French fries, we can eat mozzarella.
And he has.
Will.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, that's what we do in Italy. That's a very stable prosciutto, melon, and mozzarella. So that's, you know, when you have people coming over or friends, so that's one of the stable antipasti. Prosciutto, melone, and mozzarella. Everybody does that. And so I grew up with this food, and it's just simple but tasty.
And you said the tomatoes in the gnocchi were San Marzano?
Correct.
So some of the ingredients you're getting from Italy.
Correct.
But can you tell us a little bit about what in the menu is local and where you're sourcing some of those ingredients from?
Absolutely. I mean, right now we are about to change the menu again. In the next week or so, because the peppers are going to be local, the eggplant, tomato they're coming in. I mean, we still have we have the chicken from Springer Farm, the zucchini blossom from Tiga K. You know, right now, my goal is to change the menu, and I'm asking farmers to grow my Italian vegetables. So as soon as I get into that routine, we are going to change the menu seasonally with the local, as much as locals as we can. But I understand, you know, we're Italian, so not everything can come locally. So we have to import some stuff, like Parmigiano Reggiano has got to be imported. You know, the Caciocavallo has got to be imported. The Scamorza has got to be imported. You know, there is some ingredients in Italian cuisine that you have to import it. But peppers, eggplant, tomato, onions, potato, we use that locally. And believe me, we Italian, we eat a lot of tomato, eggplant, and zucchini now that we have, they are locally. You know, the beets, we eat beets in Italy too, and that's locally too. So, you know, right now we're trying to do as much as local, but with Italian cuisine, we can't.
And I am hoping that you can tell our listeners the story of the raviolo that we had.
Yes, this is actually, that raviolo is traditional Italian. It's called a raviolone all'uovo. So it is a raviolo with, it's a raviolo with an egg yolk in the middle. So it's kind of hard to explain, but it is a pasta sheets, and then we put ricotta around. And then we drop an egg yolk in the middle, and then we put another pasta sheets on top, and then we form a raviolo. So the goal is that when you cook the raviolo, by a couple of minutes, 2-3 minutes, and then you serve it, that when you break into it, that egg yolk should come out, and that's your sauce.
It was perfect.
It was perfect.
Thank God.
The first time you served that dish was to a much bigger crowd. Tell us about what happened there.
Well, that was a mistake, but as well, I was a winner. I learned the hard way, but I was proud when I saw the result of winning the competition. It was competition dining, and that was, I think it was my third round, and I made it through. And I had
what was the competition?
A competition dining. It's all chefs from North Carolina competing each other, and then, you know, if you do win, and then you go up to Raleigh, and then you compete with chef from Raleigh, and you know, and so I did raviolone because inspired me to say I can do that, and I know it's going to come delicious because nobody ever did it. It was a great idea, but afterwards I was like, oh my God, never again, because you know, 150 raviolone, you know, it's hard. It's a very intense to make them.
Well, that was a bold choice.
Yes.
I also don't want to forget about the wine that we drank. Jessica, can you tell us a little bit about the wine that you helped us pick up?
So it's spring, right? And there is absolutely nothing more delicious than bubbles. And there's nothing even better than pink bubbles.
Yes.
So that it's NS Vara. It's a non-vintage Vara. La Donna della Neve. And it comes from Piemonte, and it is a second-generation female winemaker, and it is 50% Nebbiolo and Pinot Nero. So, you know, normally with a lot of rosés, especially, there's a lot of Sensau. That's the one of the largest blending grapes in France and also in Italy. But it's flavorless, and it really tastes like nothing. And on the Italian side, you know, there's nothing more beautiful, I feel, than the Nebbiolo grape, the iconic, you know, Sangiovese Nebbiolos. So you have backbone and a tannic structure, but you also get light, delicate, you know, a little bit of strawberry and some watermelon, and it's just beautiful, and it cries for food. Because it holds up in a way that most rosés do not. Mm-hmm. We also have another Zaccanini rosé from Montepulciano. It's a Montepulciano di Abruzzo. It's a 100% Montepulciano, where I had, you know, the privilege of going to school. I had lived there, and you know, those wines, especially Vino Nobile, speak to my heart because it's exactly what America needs. I feel like our palate, you know, we have a Coca-Cola palate. So especially in Charlotte, they're looking for something that's terribly over-extracted and fruity and too jammy and flabby. And I think that, you know, Italian wines, to their credit, is the perfect bridge between old world and new. Mm-hmm. So it's got balance and a little bit of earth and terroir, but it's still fruity. And it's got everything that you're looking for. It's nuanced, it's pretty, and it can hold up to, you know, really flavorful dishes. So, can you tell I like wine? Yeah.
We're right there with you. Wine.
I had no idea.
It's a problem.
I appreciated that you also gave us a nod towards the that rosé bubbly being from a female winemaker in Italy.
Well, girl power, right?
Yeah.
And it was also just objectively delicious.
I don't know. I just think that, you know, beautiful and unique and sometimes on the Italian side, a little esoteric. They're also intimidating Italian wines. But I think that if you understand, you know, regionally what you're working with, especially where Luca's from in Campania, and into, you know, Puglia, those are all of the beautifully nuanced and really rich and flavorful wines that I feel do so well in our dining room, because mainly, you know, the Americans love really big, rich California reds, you know, and on the Italian side, we can do very well with that because it's like the grown-up version of what that looks like. And it pairs so beautifully with these dishes and this food that, you know, I get to have a lot of fun introducing people to things that they wouldn't readily see. Yeah.
Well, that was awesome. I love that we kind of got to walk back through our whole meal again with you guys. I'm like, yes, it was. Now I'm remembering how good it was all over again. So I think we're going to wrap things up with a few rapid fire questions. So I'll ask you a question. You both just give me your quick answer. And then, yeah, that'll be...
Don't think too hard about it.
Yeah. Okay. They're all very easy. Okay. So what was your last great bite?
Mozzarella di bufala.
Yes. We had it from this morning. It was made. So did you tell them about the Siano?
Well, these people came here 4 months. They speak like me. They are from the same town, and they came and said, I want you to try this mozzarella. I was like, okay, let me try. And then I didn't stop eating since I met them.
I love that.
So we do make our own mozzarella in-house, mm-hmm. but we cannot make mozzarella di bufala because we do not get buffalo milk. Mm-hmm. So these folks actually import the buffalo milk from Italy. And it's made locally here in Charlotte.
Wow.
So it's homegrown mozzarella di bufala.
Right.
Like, we weep. Like, there's nothing... Ted, really. Mm. It is so delicious. It's just a whole nother level. Yeah, so we had mozzarella di bufala.
So mine's mozzarella di bufala. What's yours, Jessica?
I had it with you.
Yeah, right, same right. Answer.
Because he dropped off this afternoon.
And it was made this morning.
This morning.
Wow.
It's just delicious.
There's one more little bocconcino on the table, and I have been like looking at it. It's so full.
Yeah, seriously.
It's going in somebody's pocket or purse tonight for sure. Delicious.
All right. Next question is, what is in your fridge at home?
As of last night, it was romaine, strawberries, eggs, PBR.
Yes.
And a bottle of Fiano Diabolino.
Right.
Yep.
And there was some leftovers food from the day before. And there was some food for Julian. There was some salmon. Some sliced ham.
So you're doing pretty well for yourselves at home. A lot of chefs we talk to are like Red Bull and hot sauce.
No, there's all the condiments, ketchup. Uh-huh. I love mayo, so there's always mayo in my house.
What's your mayo of choice?
Duke.
Yes,
the one that's Duke's. That's the same as Hellman's, right?
No.
Oh.
No. Duke's is the king of mayo.
Yeah.
I'm not that I'm partial or anything, okay, but yeah. yeah, that's a very well-stocked fridge. I'm impressed.
And lots of fruits. There's berries, lots of berries, because Julian loves berries and strawberries.
What is your, both of your favorite childhood meal?
Pizza.
My grandmother made lobster fra diavolo. Ooh. That would make you cry.
Wow.
Best thing I've ever had. As a kid, I remember eating it as a, you know, and it's a little spicy. She would put a little pepperoncino in it. My favorite meal.
Is there anyone in your family who can still make that recipe?
Me.
Do you make it? Luca.
Wow.
Because the first time that I wanted to, first time that I met Jessica, and she said, Anya, you need to come in and
meet. It's her birthday.
It's her birthday. You need to meet Nana, Grandma.
Today is her birthday.
Yes, that's true.
Me
that's,
too.
Yeah, that's
your birthday?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
I have the same birthday as you now. That's awesome.
All right. Her grandmother, her name was Filomena. And my mother's name is Filomena. My sister's name is Filomena. And I know it's getting weird, isn't it? But so she told me, she said, we're going to go see Nana. I want you to cook fra diavolo for her. So I did it.
Is this a trap?
It was not the same.
And Luca, what about the pizza that you mentioned? What kind of pizza?
Margherita. That's it. Plain.
Yes.
Plain. I can eat that every day. And actually the best one, the next day in the morning when it's cold.
Mm.
That's my favorite.
What are your feelings about putting an egg on leftover pizza or fresh pizza? No.
Mm. I just like my pizza.
Other than that, he'll put an egg on anything.
Uh-huh.
Put an egg on it.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
On the pizza?
But
no, don't touch my pizza.
Leave the pizza alone.
Right.
Okay. What is, Luca, what's the proudest piece of produce in your kitchen right now?
I have beautiful cauliflowers and broccoli, locally, that I bought from a local farm, and squash.
And what are
zucchini blossoms. I have a ton of it.
The zucchini blossoms, yeah.
Right.
What are you using the cauliflower and broccoli in right now?
Cauliflower, we're doing one of the salads. It's called a carbonara. And I'm doing some roasted cauliflower in it.
Nice. And a panzerotti is with caramelized cauliflower.
Right.
Mm. And then last question for you. What is the go-to family meal for staff here?
Last night, we did rigatoni with, we had some chicken from Springer Farm. We did rigatoni, Springer Farm, and spinach.
Yum.
Yeah, that's simple. Mm-hmm. Like 1, 2, 3.
So in other words, staff meal is very similar to what you're serving guests. Simple, great Italian food.
Yes.
Yeah.
My staff love pasta, and then pasta is good. Good protein and good pasta, so they can work harder.
Well, thank you both so much for a delicious meal and for having us here at Luca.
Thank you.
An absolute pleasure to meet you, and we really hope that you'll come and see us in Brooklyn and come to our studio. We will feed you a wonderful margherita pizza from Roberta's.
Thank you.
So we hope to see you there. And can you just tell our listeners where to find you on social media or your website?
Yes, it is at Luca Modern Italian Kitchen on Facebook. Luca Modern Italian Kitch on Twitter, and on Instagram it's Luca _ Modern Italian Kitchen.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
That's Jessica and Luca Annunziata, and you have been listening to HRN On Tour in Charlotte, North Carolina. Check out the full series at heritageradionetwork.org, and we'll see you soon.